from one place to the next, and I understood not only they were confused, I was already confused. I told them that the smartest thing is, I don't know, my mother would have said, Ligangeleicht, stay put, don't leave any place. Wherever you are for Purim, just stay there. It's safer, it's more comfortable, and you don't get confused with all of the halachas. Of course, in the event that one must travel, then I said the best thing is to call your local Orthodox rabbi. Preferably somebody else. But the truth is that it's very fascinating. This whole idea of Yudalit Tetvav, it's very fascinating, especially, we who live in Yerushalayim. It is special, it is unique. The Rishonim say that the reason why the day, the 15th, was established according to cities that have walls around them from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun Joshua, because at the time Eretz Yisrael was desolate, and lichvodashel Eretz Yisrael, for the honor of Eretz Yisrael, so therefore it was made dependent on cities with walls around them from days of Joshua. There's one other thought involved over here. If the halacha would have been made dependent on cities outside of Eretz Yisrael that have walls around them, the halacha would long ago have disappeared completely from the face of this earth. A halacha that is rooted in a place in Chutz Laretz does not necessarily have a long life expectancy. I don't think there's a soul in Shushan. I'm not even sure. We have some idea where Shushan is. You just talked about it. Okay, I assumed that you did, so I just... So I'll just stick to my... what I'm supposed to talk about. It's just that I have to begin with those psukim. As I usually tell you, don't be concerned about the fact that the sources that you have seem to be so formidable. We'll make our way through it. What I really wanted to do over here is, we never get to the end of the Megillah. For 20 years, you've been hearing Shiurim on the beginning of the Megillah. So I'm going to take you through a little bit at the end that's going to bring us back to the middle, not to the beginning. On the first sheet, we have the last part of the last chapter. It begins at the top of Pasuk Yud Gimel, Yudalad, then Tetvav. You can read it in the English, on whichever side you want. The Jews who were in Shushan also gathered to do battle on the 14th day of Adar. Vayargu b'Shushan shlosh meyot ish. In Shushan they killed 300 people who are bizol u'sholchu es yodam, and they did not lay their hand on the spoils. U'sha'or ha'yehudim, and the other Jews asher b'medinot ha'melech, that are in the states, the countries of the king, nekalu v'amod al nafsham, they gathered and defended themselves. By the way, this is also extremely important. I think that we are at a particular juncture in history where we might even be able to look back on Ahasuerus with a certain degree of longing. After all of Esther's pleading, he finally agreed. You see, because he said that the original letters that had been sent out saying to destroy the Jewish people, anything that's been signed by the king, you simply can't revoke it. But he did give Jews the permission to defend themselves. And today we're on trial for trying to defend ourselves. Give me good old Russia Ahasuerus. And that's why the words written in the Megillah here are very clear, because all it says is, Ushara Yudim Rabshem, the Medinot HaMelech, the other Jews in the other states of the king, Nikalu, they gathered Vomod al Rabsham. They stood up to defend themselves. Venoach Meoivehem, and they rested from their enemies. Vaharog Bidhson Ehem, and they killed By the way, that's fascinating. We're not going to go into it now. The difference between oyev and sonei, one who's an enemy and one who hates, a sonei is worse than an oyev. V'horog sonehem, those who hate and despise them. The chamisha v'shivim elef, 75,000 uvabizolo shalchu et yadam, they didn't take any spoil. B'yom shlosh also l'chodesh adar, they, in all of the states of the realm, it was on the 13th day of the month of Adar. V'noach ba'arba'osobo, and they rested on the 14th. V'oso oto yom mishte v'simcha, they made it a day of festivity and joy. Of a festive meal and joy. The Jews over in Shushan, they gathered on the 13th. Ubar Bo'osopo, they fought for 2 days. The Noach Bechamishosopo, and they rested on the 15th. Vaso Oto Yom Mishteva Simcha, they made the 15th a day of Mishteva Simcha, of a festive meal and joy. Al Kain, therefore, what has happened through history is, HaYehudim HaProzim, Jews who live in open cities, HaYom Shvim Ba'arei HaPerozot, who live in cities without walls, Osim Et Yom HaBos V'Chodesh Adar, they make the 14th day of the month of Adar, Simcha, now watch the words, they make, in other words, up until now we were describing what happened that year. Now we're describing what is the result and how is this celebrated. So it says, Therefore, those who live in the open cities, they make the 14th day of the month of Adar Simcha u'mishte v'yom tov, day of joy, a day of festive meal, and yom tov. The word yom tov is important, not only because of the fact that it appears here in the pasuk, even more because later on, when we can have another description of what Purim is all about, the word yom tov does not appear. It appears only here and not later. And the Gemara explains, because originally when it was established, they wanted to establish Purim as a day of Yontif. A day of Yontif means a day on which work is prohibited. But Klal Yisrael had the last word, and they were not ready to accept it as a day of Yontif, which would prohibit work. So we'll see that it's going to be a Yom of Mishteh v'Simcha, but it's going to be a day on which work is permitted. So that means there's a fascinating status. It's a yontif, but it's not a yontif. It's really a day of festivity, but it's a yom chol. It's a weekday in terms of its status. Umishloach monos ish l'reyehu, and sending portions, man to his fellow man. Vayichtov Mordechai et hadvarim eila, Mordechai wrote all of these things. Vayishlach svarim el kol ha-yehudim, and he sent letters to all of the Jews. He sent letters out to all of the Jews who are in all the states of Achashverosh, Hakrovim v'Harachokim, those who are close and those who are distant, L'kayem aleim, that they should establish upon themselves, or that they should accept and fulfill, L'yot osim et yom arbosa l'chodesh ador v'yom chamisha osopo b'chol shana v'shana, they should make yontif, they should make a holiday. Take back the word yontif. They should rejoice on the 14th and the 15th every year. Kayomim, just like the days, asher nochu behem ha-yehudim me'oyeveihem, just as those days that Jews rested from their enemies, v'ha-chodesh, asher nehafach lehem miyogon l'simcha, that month that had been completely turned over from depression to joy, u'me'evel liyontif, and from mourning to yontif, la'asot otam yimei, mishte v'simcha, u'mishloach monot ish l'reyehu. And now what was also added was umatanot le'evyonim, and gifts to the poor. The kivel ha'yehudim et asher hechelu la'asod, Jews accepted that which they had already begun. That which they had already begun to practice, now they accepted it upon themselves as law for all time. The kivel ha'yehudim et asher hechelu la'asod, ve'et asher katav Mordechai aleim, and what Mordechai wrote to them, ki Haman ben Amdasa Hagogi Tzorei Kol HaYehudim Choshav Al HaYehudim Labdam, because Haman the son of Amdasa, the Agogi, the oppressor of all the Jews, thought about the Jews to destroy them, V'hipul Purhu Agoral, and he cast lot L'humamu L'habdam, to confuse them and to destroy them. U'bevoa L'fnei HaMelech Omer Ma'asefer, Yashuv Machshavto Hara'ah. And when this came before the king, he said in writing that the evil thought that he had thought about the Jews should return al Rosho upon his head, the Tolu Atot V'Anav Alavetz, and they hung him and his sons on the tree. Okay. Kodol Yom Ve'Ela Purim, that's why these days are called Purim, al Shem HaPur. Some years ago we discussed why indeed is it called Purim, and we then developed the idea that Purim, a poor, lots represent the idea that man is extremely vulnerable. Anything can happen at any moment in time. In a sense, it would seem as though life is like a roll of the dice. Man doesn't know what's going to happen. You get up in the morning and you don't know what's going to happen. Thank God we don't think about it too much, because if we would think about it, it would make our days even more difficult to get through. One doesn't know. One doesn't know what's going to happen. One doesn't know, God forbid, should never happen, when tragedy will strike. The idea of a goral is the idea as though we seem to be in the hands of fate. And we don't know. The goral represents the idea of Purim. And just like anything can happen to bring upon us unfortunate things, the poor can also work the other way. The goral can work that, it turns over, and what seemed to be absolute destruction coming down upon the Jewish people becomes a time of mishta v'simcha. I believe that our Soloveitchik in the Shir once said, Chachmei HaKabbalah say that Yom HaKippurim is a day k'purim, like Purim. What an unusual statement. In other words, the most solemn and serious day of the year, if you want to understand its essence, it is like Purim, which is obviously the most frivolous year in the Jewish calendar. So the Rav once explained this by saying, because what is the central sacrifice of Purim, of Yom HaKippurim? The two goats are brought before the Kohen Gadol. He puts his hands into a box, and he's going to take out two lots. One goes on one goat, another on the other goat, and in that simple second of the draw of the lots, one is going to be sacrificed in the Bet HaMikdash, and one is going to be cast down from a mountaintop outside of Yerushalayim. In a sense, there's such an uncertainty to life. By the way, the Rav there says, that's why God is merciful, because he truly knows the fears that people live with. Yes, that uncertainty. And because man lives with that kind of fear, God is the one who forgives him. Yes. Well, the Netanya Tokef is really expressing what ultimately becomes the central theme of the Yom Noroyim, the fact that the future is unknown to us, and by the future means the next minute. We don't know. God forbid, will there be an earthquake? Chas v'shalom, another bus? Who knows? We don't know. Where will we be? You think I don't become a little nervous when I'm driving and I come to a red light and there's a bus next to me? But we don't have these feelings. We're not concerned sometimes. We go into a restaurant. What's going to happen? This vulnerability of man is the reason why God has great mercy and compassion upon man. So Yom HaKippurim is a day like Purim, because Purim just seems to have been the toss of the dice. One day we're all to be destroyed, and then, no, we're not destroyed. Anyway, Alkein Korol Yom Ve'Ela Purim, that's why these days are called Purim, al kol divrei hoigeret hazot, umaro al kocha, and what they saw fit, umahigi aleim, the whole story of what happened. Kimu v'kiblu al yehudim aleim, al zarim al kol, al nilvim aleim, v'lo yavor, the Jews accepted upon themselves and upon their children and all who are part of their families never to let it pass from before them, lihiyot osim et shdei ayom ha'meila k'chsovim k'zmanam, to make these 2 days as they were written and in their times, b'chol shana b'shana, every year. These days are remembered and done in every generation, mishpacha, mishpacha, family and family, medina, medina, state and state, ear to ear, city and city. The Yemei HaPurim Ha'ela, unusual statement that the Megillah says, these days of Purim lo yavru mitoch hayudim, will never pass away from amongst the Jews, v'zichram lo yosuf mizaram, and the memory of Purim will never be gone. Rambam even says, "Atidin, all other Yom Tovim may end up or will no longer be celebrated, except for Purim. Purim will always remember, will always remain. All of those Yom Tovim that are Zechel Yitziat Mitzrayim is will be passé in the days of Mashiach. But everything that's represented by Purim, which is man in his normal life, vulnerable, oftentimes frightened, weak human being, needs the strength that is given to him by Purim. Now, Vatichtav, here's where really, first of all, at least I made sure that we learned Psukim that we never learned before. All right, that's number one. Now, Vatichtav Esther Hamalka, Bat Avichayil, Mordechai Yehudi, all of a sudden, all the letters up until now, there have been letters that have been sent by Mordechai. Now it's Esther. Esther, the queen, the daughter of Avichayil, and Mordechai HaYehudi wrote at Kol Tokef, all of the major events, L'kayem et Igeret HaPurim Hazot HaShenit. Notice there were second letters that went out a year later, a year after Purim. L'kayem et Igeret HaPurim Hazot HaShenit. Watch the word Igeret. Igeret means a letter. Okay? Now, by the way, letters were already sent out to everybody. What is this second set of letters? Why is he sending out more letters? So it says, Vayishlach Sforim el Kol HaYehudim el Sheva ve'esrim u'mei u'medina Malchut HaChashverosh Divrei Shalom ve'emet. Sent out to 127 states, the kingdom of HaChashverosh, words of peace and truth. We have to know what's the meaning of words of peace and truth. Lekayim et Yemei HaPurim Ha'ele. Lekayim et Yemei HaPurim Ha'ele. Bizmanehem, Kashe Kiyam Aleihem Mordechai HaYehudi VeEsther HaMalka. Words are going to be very, 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 very careful. They have to be understood. To establish these days of Purim on their proper dates, as Mordechai, the Jew, and Esther, the queen. Now, watch. Notice something else over here. When it said Vatichtov, it was Esther and then Mordechai. And now it says Mordechai and then Esther. The Chasher Kimu al Nafsham v'al Zaram, as they had confirmed upon themselves and their children, divrei hatzomot v'zaakatam, the fast and the crying. I mean, if you don't understand these psukim, then your reality testing is perfect, 100%. Okay? Umamar Esther kiyem, and the words of Esther were confirmed. Divrei haPurim ha'ele, these words of Purim, v'nichtav ba'sefer, and it was written in a sefer. Here also Rav Soloveitchik deals with this, and he says there's something very fascinating over here. What's taking place over here is, we've already established that the days of Purim are two, the 14th and the 15th. We have also established that they are going to be celebrated not as Yontif, but as days of Mishteh v'Simcha, festive meals and joy. We've also further established it was a development that took place here.
that they're going to be Mishloach Monot Ish L'Reyehu, what man will send to his friend, gifts of food, portions of food, a mana. The word is not matanot. When we're talking about the poor, it says matanot le'evyonim, gifts to the poor. But Mishloach Manot is really something that can be used for the Seudat Purim, which is food, a portion of food. We've established all of those halachas. All of that has been taken care of. What are these last few psukim? What are Esther and Mordechai now writing again? What's the purpose of all of this? Yes? Very good question. He wants to know, is the Beit HaMikdash built? Is there a Sanhedrin? What is their authority to do any of this? Okay. So the fact is, the Beit HaMikdash at that point, construction had begun, but construction was stopped by a man called Achashverosh. And twice when Esther comes into him and he sees her, that first time when she takes her life in her hands and she comes in and he extends the golden scepter, he says, Esther, Ad chatzi ha-malchut v'teyas, I will do anything for you up until half of the kingdom. And Chazal, our rabbis say, Ad chatzi ha-malchut, until it comes to the point where you're going to deal with an issue that's going to split my kingdom down the middle. And that is, don't ask me about the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. We're just not going to permit that. It was worldwide policy that Mikdash is not to be built. Of course, she could have been some gayish liberal from the United States of America, a fundamentalist Christian who believes that there will only be, Messiah will only come, you understand, after there's a temple in Jerusalem. Do I know? He doesn't know she's Jewish. You're absolutely right. He doesn't know that she's Jewish. He says it to her a second time the next day. In other words, it's clear that the idea of Beit HaMikdash, or the centrality of Yerushalayim, was an issue then like it has always been. A central issue in the world. People can be killed and murdered. People can be starving. And the world out there is concerned about Yerushalayim. Well, I'm back to you. Yeah. Mordechai is a member of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah are the ones that are ultimately going to, together with the acquiescence of the Jewish people, are going to give their imprimatur on this Yantif. It's not going to happen without them. Mordechai and Esther can suggest. Not only can Mordechai and Esther suggest, they can cajole, they can try and can convince, and that's exactly what they're doing. But what are they doing in these last few psukim? In these last few psukim, do you know what they want? They want that an igeret should be transformed into a sefer. An igeret is a letter. Now, a letter, there are times, I mean, those of us who have seichel take letters, and after we've read them, we throw them away. There are those of us, of course, who save everything and everything until the day that we get so upset with ourselves. The children throw it out. But a letter, by its very nature, is temporary. The opposite of an igeret is a sefer. And when we're talking about sefer, we are talking about a sefer that's going to have the sanctity and the holiness of one of the Kitvei HaKodesh. What's happening in these last few psukim, and the initiative comes from Esther. We're going to see the Gemara, where the Gemara says that there were two requests that were sent by Esther to the Chachamim, to the Sanhedrin, to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. One was, Kivouni ledorot, establish me and all of these stories as a yantif for all generations. And then comes the even greater request. Kitvuni ledorot, write me for all generations. What she wants is that the story of Purim should become sanctified for all time as one of the Kitvei HaKodesh, one of the 24 holy writings. And the Rav talks about this, and he says, there's such a fascinating paradox. Ultimately, the rabbis agree. In that last pasuk, Umamar Esther Kiyem Divrei HaPurim Ha'ele V'Nichtav Basefer, the Rav reads that last line the following. The word V'Kiyam is a difficult word, and it appeared a few times. Look, in the pasuk before, L'Kayem Et Yimei HaPurim Ha'ele B'Zmaneim Kasher Kiyam Aleim Mordechai HaYehudi V'Esther HaMalka V'Kasher Kimu Al Nafsham V'Al Zaram Divrei HaTzomot V'Zakatam. A few times, that's three times in one pasuk. She says the meaning of the word kiyam is not as we would usually say confirm or whatever other translation is used. There is in halacha that which is called kiyum shtarot. Kiyum shtarot means the following. You have a shtar, you have a document. You want bedin to certify that this is a true legal document that was written properly and it carries weight and it has meaning. So Bedin will bring witnesses who will testify that they were there when the document was written and that whatever it says in the document is indeed true. Then Bedin will write down at the bottom of the document, Ashrinhu, we find it correct, the kiyiminhu, we are mekayim it. Kiyum shtarot means giving a document, giving a letter. Validity, that it's real, that it's true, that takes something that was a letter and now raises it to a document that is indeed, that it does indeed have power and can be used. He says the word kiyim over him means the following. What she wants the Sanhedrin to take the letter in which they wrote the whole story of Purim and turn it into a sefer. Umamar Esther, the words of Esther, the request of Esther, Kian, they gave validity to Divrei HaPurim Ha'ele, this story of Purim, v'nichtav, and it was written, a sefer. It's now a sefer. It's now a book. And that's what Sanhedrin did. They elevated it to be one of the 24 Kitvei HaKodesh. But they had a problem. One of their problems was a fascinating problem. The mitzvah of reading the Megillah, Seudat Purim, the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos, of Matonis Levyonim, is that a biblical mitzvah or a rabbinic mitzvah? It's rabbinic. Chanukah and Purim is rabbinic. But you understand the unbelievable paradox? That which is Torah tells us of the rabbinic enactment. When we say that the Megillah has a halacha of sefer, you know what it means? It has the same sanctity as the parsha of Shema Yisrael. Like you cannot destroy a pasuk in Torah, you cannot destroy a Megillah. Though it doesn't have the name of Hashem in it, it's one of the 24 Kitvei HaKodesh. In a sense, the rabbis were asking Esther, there's a great paradox over here. You want a sefer. And in that sefer, there are going to be all sorts of halachot that are midrabanan. How does that work? So she responded very beautifully. There are four fast days. Tzom Gedalia, Asara B'Teves, Shiva Asa B'Tamuz, and Tisha B'Av. We don't count Tanit Esther, because Tanit Esther was never a real enactment of the rabbis. Tanit Esther, the fast of Esther, is Minhag. And some of the Rishonim say, because we assume that at the time Jews fasted, there are those who say it's a commemoration for the 3-day fast. of Esther. In Sefer Zechariah, the prophet asks God, Ha'evkeh b'chodesh ha'chamishi, Zechariah is already talking, there's a Bet HaMikdash, Jews are on the way back home. Should I cry in the fifth month, Tisha B'Av? And God responds that the fast of the tenth month and the fast of the sixth month and the fifth month, the sixth month, the seventh month, all of those fast days will someday be days of, sometime they will become days of joy and happiness. So Esther tells the rabbis, take a look at this. There are four fast days that are rabbinic enactments. And do you know where they appear? They appear in Tanakh. That convinced the rabbis to turn Megillat Esther from an egeret into a sefer. Take a look at that pasuk before again. L'kayem et yimei ha'purim ha'ele bizmaneim kasher kiyem aleim Mordechai ha'yehudi v'Esther ha'malko v'chasher kimu al nafsham. She's saying just as they established upon themselves and their children divrei ha'tzomot v'zakatam, the fast days of the crying out. She's telling the rabbis, listen, the fast days also appear in Tanakh. Which of course means the following, that the dividing line between a rabbinic enactment and a biblical enactment can be very, very thin. It's not sort of, well, it's only rabbinic. They're both serious, and they both have to be kept. So what's happened over here is the sefer, the egeret, has become a sefer. The letter has become a sefer. It becomes one of the 24 Kitvei HaKodesh, one of the 24 holy writings. Yes. Where did they appear in Sefer Zechariah? I think it's chapter 7 and 8. That's where they appear. What I want to deal with now, as an outgrowth of this, so we have a Megillah. Why is it called Megillat Esther? Why is it called Megillat Esther? So of course there have been all sorts of answers why it's called Megillat Esther. Because God is in concealment, and the purpose of the reading of Megillat Esther is to be Megaleh, to be able to reveal that which is in concealment. And for that matter, that's the task of the Jew at every moment in life and throughout all of our history. God is acting, but he's acting behind the scenes, and we reveal him. Yes?
Are you suggesting that Esther and Hester are related?
I'm not merely suggesting it. The rabbi suggested it. The rabbi asked the following question. Esther min ha-Torah minayin? How do we know Esther from Torah? And where is Esther alluded to in Torah? And the Gemara says, at the end of Torah, God, Moshe says in the name of God, V'anochi haster astir panai b'yomahu. I'm going to conceal my face on that day. The Gemara also says, Haman min ha-Torah minayin. Where do we have Haman alluded to in Torah? I'm going to go off on a tangent, but for 2 minutes. It's your fault. And the Gemara says, you know where we have Haman in the Torah? When God says to Adam HaRishon, first man, Hamin ha'etz asher siviticha lo lechol. Did you eat from that tree that I told you not to eat? Hamin ha'etz. Now one may think, you know, cutesy wootsy, you understand? Hey Memnon, hey Memnon. So you should know, there's nothing ever cute about what the rabbis say. It's profound. And on this, I must have heard 40 years ago, the name of Rabbaron Kotler, Zechet Tzadok Levracha. Rabbaron said the following. You know what our rabbis are telling us? God told first man, you can eat from everything in the world, except one tree. And he couldn't control himself. The whole world bows down to Haman. There's one Yidala who doesn't. So what? You know what my mother, Allah Shalom, would have told Haman? Don't pay attention.
attention to him. Let it roll off your back. You care that this little Yidala doesn't... Hey! No. The one thing he doesn't have is that which he wants. The one thing that Adam doesn't have, that's what he wants. So it's not that our rabbi simply put together Hey Mem Nun and Hey Mem Nun. Hamin Ha'etz, that's it. You needed that one. And hold on, because there's one Jew that doesn't bow down to him. Then of course you have to destroy all the Jews. You have to destroy them all. That's the only way to deal with this problem. Because this is not a localized problem. In his mind already it's become a global conflict. The whole world is going to fall apart because there's one Yidala that doesn't want to bow down to him. Number two, I'm going to have to move quickly because I have some ideas to express today that, you know, blew my mind a little bit. On the beginning of page two, this is the Gemara, and the Gemara is dealing with different psukim in the Megillah. So it says, Ish Yehudi, Shushan Abiru, there was a Jew in Shushan Abiru, whose name was Mordechai ben Yor ben Kish Ish Yemini. And then he says, Vayihi Omein, he took care of Hadassah, he Esther, ki ain lo avein, she had no father or mother, ubemos avia, v'ima, and when her mother and father died, so it says, Mordechai, lekocha lo lebat, he took her unto himself as a daughter. That's how the Megillah says. So the Gemara asks, if it says already, ain lo avein, she doesn't have a father or mother, why does the Torah, why does the Megillah have to repeat, Uvemot avia v'ima, when her father and mother died? Rav Acha says, Ibarta, when her mother was pregnant with her, mate avia, her father died. Yoladata, when she was born, meita ima, her mother died. The Pasuk repeats it twice in order to tell she never had or knew a father, neither father nor mother. Uvemot avia, the Megillah states further, Uvemot avia v'ima lekocha Mordechai lo lebat. Mordechai took her unto himself as a daughter. Tanu mishum Rabbi Meir, we learned in the name of Rabbi Meir, Al tikri lebat el lebayit. Don't read it as a daughter. He took her for his house. He married her. Mordechai and Esther were married to one another. His home, his wife. And now the Gemara now proves that the word bat can be explained as bayit. V'chein hu omer, v'larosh, the poor man, ein kol, ki im kifsa achas ketana, he has one little shepsala, ashekona, that he had purchased, v'yichayeho, he gave her life, v'tigdal imo, v'im badav yachtav, she grew up with him and with his children together, mipito tochal, from his bread she would eat, mikoso tishteh, from his cup she would drink, u'becheiko tishkav, and she would lie in his bosom, vatihilo kibat. Lying in the bosom represents marriage and can still be called a bat. And that's what the Gemara is going to go on to the bottom. Okay. Three. I had already mentioned these two Gemaras. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, Sholchalem Esther l'chachamim, Esther sent to the wise men. Esther submitted the following request to the sages, Kivuni ledorot. Please remember these two words. Establish me for all generations. Establish an everlasting name for me by mandating a festival of Purim and the reading of the Megillah. Sholchulah, so the rabbi sent back the following reply. Kina atma ogeret aleinu lebein ha'umot. You want to incite the wrath of the nations against us? That we rejoice at the fall of our enemies? Sholcholahem, so she sent back a message. Kvark tuva niyal divrei hayamim l'malchei madei uparaz. I am already written in the chronicles of the kings of Persia and Media. It's already, the media knows all about it. It's known. You're not going to tell them anything new. Now, skip the next paragraph, and the Gemara now cites their teaching. Sholcholahem Esther l'chachamim. Second request that Esther sent to the chachamim. Kitvuni l'dorot. Write me for all generations. Kivuni ledorot, establish me, is that there should be a yontif with all of the mitzvahs. Mishloach manot, kriyat hamegillah. Matanis Levyonim, Sudas Purim. Then she also sent Kitvuni Ledorot. That's how we explain those last few psukim in the Megillah that we read, that she wants to be written. Sholchulah, so they sent back a message to her. So the rabbis are going to tell him that we have some kind of a tradition that it should be written three times and not four times, and it is written already three times. In which way is it written three times? At the end of Parashat Bishalach, the struggle against Amalek. At the end of Parashat Kitetze, second time that the struggle against Amalek is written. In Sefer Shmuel, when Shaul is told to go destroy Amalek, it's written for the third time. The Gemara then rebuilds the Psukim, and they do find the possibility that you can write the story of Amalek for a fourth time, really a third time, because Beshalach and Kitetze are all the same. I don't know why, you know, every year there are different things that bother me. What bothered me this year was the first person singular. Esther sends a message to the Chachamim, establish me, kiv u ni, establish me for all generations. What, there's no Rabbeinu Shalom over here? We're not talking about a miracle that God did for the Jewish people. What do you mean, kiv u ni, establish me for all time? And then when she asks that the Megillah become part of the holy writings, kitvu ni, write me for all generations. Me? Where's Mordechai? Where's all of Klal Yisrael? Isn't there something here that is lacking in a certain degree of humility? You want to take a chance? Go ahead, take a chance. All right, she says that it means that the individuals can accomplish great things. That's what you're saying? Don't pass the buck to anybody else. All right, so then I'm going to share to you what I was thinking of. Yes? I believe so. If I remember correctly, yes. So I'll tell you, I'd have to think more about your question. I'd certainly come up with some kind of an answer. But since I'm pressed for time now to say what I have to say, you're going to have to wait for another Purim. That's all. So I'll tell you, you know what we forget about? You know what doesn't occur to us? How many thousands of little children are going to dress up like Queen Esther? Queen Esther. Queen Esther. Esther. Esther is most probably one of the most tragic figures in all of Jewish history. Do you know when she decides that she's going to go to the king? Number one, she takes her life in her hands. She may be dead. Anybody who hasn't been invited, there are people standing there that will cut her down. She is going on Kiddush Hashem. And then at that last moment, he stretches out the golden scepter. But it's more than that. It's more than that. Esther says to Mordechai, I'm going to go. Kasher ovadeti ovadeti. As I've been lost, I will be lost. And in number 5, on the next side, I have the Rashi over there. Fourth line in the Rashi. I'm going to go to the king, asher lo kadat. Not according to the law. She'in dat li kanes asher lo yikare, because the law does not permit somebody to go in who hasn't been called to the king. Umedrash agod, and the Medrash says, asher lo kadat. You know what's even worse now? The Gemara asks, how was a good Jewish girl able to marry Ahasuerus? That's the second question. No, it does matter. This is a serious question in halacha. Two questions. How does she go? How does she marry him? So on this, the Gemara says, a woman is passive in the sexual relationship. Esther karka olam haita. Esther was like ground, earth, passive. That was one. And then, of course, there's the big question. She's married to Mordechai. The reason the Rishonim asked the question, at least give her a divorce. Before she goes, write a get. Trust me, there are excellent reasons why she can't write a divorce. A divorce in these witnesses, it will be known. And if it becomes known, who knows what explosion is going to take place in the palace. And the fate of an entire Jewish people is hanging by a thread. So she says to him, the Medrash says, Ashalokadat Sha'ad Ata, until now, whenever I went to Ahasuerus, it was Be'ones. It was against my will. Va'achshav Be'gotzon. Now when she presents herself before Ahasuerus, she's coming there, in fact, out of her own free will. And you know what that means? Next Rashi. V'kasher avadati avadati. V'kasher itchalti, and if, as I've been lost, I will be lost. V'kasher itchalti lelech, as I've begun to go, le'ibud, I'm going to be destroyed. Eilech v'amot, possible, the possibility now is, I will die. U'medrash ha'god, the Medrash says, kasher avadati mi beit abba, as I was lost from my father's house, Ovad Mimcha, we were lost from you. Shemiyachshav Shani Beratzon, now that I'm going, of my free will, Niv'ala Ani, and he lives with me, Amasur Allah, I am prohibited L'cha to you. Do you understand what sacrifice this woman has made? She is giving up the person whom she loves more than anything else in the world. She's giving up Mordechai. She's going to be prohibited to Mordechai. She is making a greater sacrifice than her bubba Rachel. They came from the family of Rachel. She gave up her husband, but only for a limited period of time, for a week. She sent her sister Leah in first. This Esther is going to make a profound sacrifice that's going to last for a lifetime. She's giving up Mordechai. She's giving up Mordechai. You know what else she's giving up? I wonder if she had ever had a Friday night table at which Kinderlach and Einigluch sat around saying Torah, singing Zmiris. Did she ever have a Yontif that was a Yontif? Did she know what a Pesach, a Shavuos, a Sukkos? Who did she live with all of those years? A cruel, evil human being. Do you understand what this little Madel did for all of Klal Yisrael? Her life became an absolutely profound tragedy. So you'll tell me it was worth it all. She saved the Jewish people. She saved the Jewish people. That in no way diminishes the daily pain of her life. I don't see Esther anymore as, wow, Queen Esther, the beautiful Queen Esther. The tragic Queen Esther. You can see the sadness. If you look carefully, you'll see the sadness. Completely separated from all of her roots. She lost it all. Lost everything that anybody would want. It what? What wouldn't work today? But you understand. You understand now that she is a tragic character? Is it possible that she's saying, I'm not gonna have a psenanical, I'm not gonna have great grandchildren. Kisvuni, write me in memoriam to Esther, write something so that I'm remembered within the confines of Klal Yisrael. Kisvuni, that's right. I've given up so much, that's all I ask. All I ask is that people should be able to say from year to year, we're going to read Megillas Esther. And maybe the day is going to come that somebody is going to realize the extent of the profound tragedy that my life is and what I've given up for Klal Yisrael. Kivouni l'dorot. She has the right to ask it. She has the right that she, yes, me, it's not a matter of gaiva, of great, I want me to be written. I gave up everything. I gave up everything that any Jewish girl has a right to aspire to. I gave it all up. My life became Gehenim on earth. And do you know what? I could never let it show. I could never let it show. I had to play act for my whole life with Achashverosh. I had to make believe that I like him. I had to make believe that this is a very happy marriage. Do you know what great strength that takes of a woman? She's a tragedy. And Magiala, Kitvuni Ledorot. Kivuni Ledorot. Yes? You, let's hear. I can't hear. Yeah, yeah, you have my permission. I'm just saying my pshat that I like, by the way. By the way, you're not disagreeing with me. You're not disagreeing with me at all. The only thing is, in halach, I can't agree with you. Because there are... Did she have the right to do it? You're saying she didn't have the right to do it. Do you know what happens the moment that Megillat Esther is turned from an igeret into a sefer? It becomes Torah. I remember at the end of one of a great shir, the Rav said, the most significant halacha that you learn from Megillat Esther is that a Jew has a responsibility to do whatever he can to save Klal Yisrael. And he said this after the Six-Day War, and he says the hundreds of young men and women that lost their lives were being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim as she did. The Noda Behuda writes in a tshuva that yes, when it's a hatzol of Klal Yisrael, she had a right to do what she did, so I'm not ready to agree that she loses Olam Haba. The Noda Behuda in a tshuva in Simin Kuf Samech Aleph, the Noda Behuda says that she... Right. She was not only permitted to do what she did, she had to do what she did, which doesn't make it any easier. So you want to add, Kivuni Lidorot established that what I did was Torah. What I did was Torah. I didn't reject Torah by going in as a married woman to Achashverosh. Fine, but it doesn't diminish the extent of the personal sacrifice of this woman. By the way, that's why I believe at the end of the Megillah it says Esther and Mordechai, because Mordechai also suffered. He was giving up the love of his life. He was giving up that which is most precious. Ubemos avi avi ima lekocha, he took her unto him like a daughter. He's giving up that. She will not be his wife anymore. We're talking about Esther and Mordechai, who have made great sacrifices to the Jewish people. And in halacha, there's a great deal, can a woman do this to save Klal Yisrael? Many poskim say not only a woman may, she should, she must do it. But it's only we're talking about Klal Yisrael. So I say Kivouni Ledorot and Kitvuni Ledorot is something that she absolutely had a right to say. Either as the gentleman back there says, to establish that at least what I did was not in opposition to the Shulchan Aruch, not to the Halacha. I happen to feel that this is this is her memorial for all time. A woman who, for all intents and purposes, stepped out of Klal Yisrael and gave up all the simple things. The simple, simple things. A Shabbos, a Yontif, a Kinderlach going to school. She gave it all up. All right, Kisvuni. So we're really saying that, yes, that I have a share in Olam Haba. Yes. There is certainly no question about it that she needed Mordechai's encouragement to do it. But do you know, he must have been crying as he encouraged her to do that, because he knows that he's going to lose her. So that there's a... let's say the following, you know what it means? There's never an antiseptic victory. There's no such thing as a victory and a great miracle without a price being paid. There's a price being paid. Every war that was won over here, we paid awesome price. We're paying a tremendous price just for living here. There's a price. And it's called Megillat Esther, so that we remember. You know what? As I'm talking to you, it occurs to me that maybe Megillat Esther means to reveal what Esther was. Megillat Esther, to reveal to us what Esther truly was. I like it. Yes. Yeah. But we said that all the years that she lived with him, she was permitted to him because it was against her will. This is the first time that she's going in willingly to him. It's a whole different halachic story now. No. It says twice. When he's looking for a wife, it says twice, Vatilokach Esther. Esther was taken. And this is the first time where it says she presents herself before him. So that's why I like this Megillat Esther. It reveals what Esther really was. Chag Sameach.